the great Kohan Levi Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. Today I'd like to continue continue the series of sermon that we have been working on concerning overcoming the desire to sin. And hopefully I'll be able to really conclude this subject today, because really it started off with our high priest Yahshua and the example that he set. Because Yahshua set the perfect example of how to resist sin, because he was one who never sinned, but he was exposed to it. And in some of the previous sermons, we looked at one of the first things in order to not sin is to avoid it. You know, to avoid it as much as possible, to avoid exposing yourself to it, avoid exposing your children to it. You know, that's really, really critical, because then you cut down on the influence. As long as you expose yourself to it, then you have that influence. And that influence, if you constantly have it coming in, then it's going to direct your actions because of the influences that are coming in. And then the other aspect of it, we were looking at how Satan's will really pushes sin at you. That type of lifestyle, the lifestyle of fornication, adultery, and so forth, you know, that's really pushed out there because that's what Satan's will consists of. And if you participate in it, or not really participate, but it's easy for an individual to get drawn into it because of how it is marketed, how it is sold, and all the associations with it. So again, it comes back down to avoiding, you know, avoiding that pattern or avoiding the situation. But all of this, let's go to Genesis chapter 1. And let's rehearse a little bit concerning this plan that Yahweh set forth from the beginning. So Genesis chapter 1, and looking at verse 26. And keep this in mind, because really this is one of the greatest understanding that the house of Yahweh has, that differentiates the house of Yahweh from the world, especially the world religions, is that Yahweh has a plan. And Yahweh is doing something with mankind. And it's really the only thing that makes sense. But once you have this in your mind, it's really easy, or it becomes easier to understand everything else in the scriptures, and even everything that goes on in your personal life, knowing that Yahweh has a plan. And his plan is to make mankind in his image. So Genesis 1:26 says, "Then Yahweh said, I will make man in my image according to my likeness. They will have rulership or authority over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So this is the plan of Yahweh. And of course, we are in the process of being made in the image of Yahweh, taking on his likeness, taking on his character. Let's go to Genesis chapter 4, because within this process, we are shown throughout the scriptures that mankind has been made subject to vanity. And over the past few weeks, Pastor has been going over this, Genesis chapter 3, showing us what occurred, especially in Genesis 3:24, talking about the flaming sword and the cherubim that was placed at the east of Eden, showing that all of this was set up beforehand. But in Genesis chapter 4, verse 7, here we read, "If you do righteousness, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do righteousness, sin is crouching at your door. The desire to sin is with you, but you must overcome it." And this is where we are all at in the house of Yahweh. We are overcoming that desire to sin in order to become like our high priest Yahshua, who is sinless, and also to follow the example of Yahweh himself, who set everything in motion and training us to become like him. Let's turn to Jacob chapter 1. Jacob chapter 1 and read verse 12, and we shall see how this works again. Because in order to resist sin, you have to begin to understand how it operates and how we are drawn in. And what we covered previously is that our own desires is what really draws us in. You know, no one could force you to do anything unless you yourself choose to do it. You know, no one could really force you to do anything. And Yahweh is not trying to force you to do anything either. He just offers us an opportunity, and he offers us a choice, and by giving us knowledge so that we are capable of making that decision. But if you notice, so let's start from verse 12. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been proved, he will receive the crown and life which Yahweh has promised to those who love him. So this goes along with the plan in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. But notice, blessed is the man who endures temptation, meaning that, yes, you are going to be tempted, but if you endure it, if you stand firm in righteousness, when you have been proved, you will receive the crown and life, that authority and life, eternal life, which Yahweh has promised to those who love him. Verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by Yahweh, for Yahweh cannot be tempted with evil, nor does he tempt anyone. So Yahweh don't tempt anyone. Neither does Yahweh tempt anyone with evil. Yahweh will never put something, an evil thing in front of an individual and tell them to choose. That's not Yahweh. The only thing that Yahweh sets before us is righteousness. And that's what we find in the house of Yahweh. That's the only thing that is set before us is righteousness. So any evil thing, it's not coming from Yahweh. Verse 14, but each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lusts and enticed. Then when lust is conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is fully matured, it brings forth death. So let's start from verse 13, and let's look at this word tempted. And this word tempted means to try, make trial of, test, for the purpose of ascertaining his quantity or what he thinks or how he will behave himself. So this temptation that is placed before us, and remember, it's not Yahweh that is doing it. This is being done by Satan herself. Remember that tree, that mixture of righteousness and evil. But there's a purpose behind it, because it is for the purpose of ascertaining his quantity or what he thinks or how he will behave himself. It also means to try or test one's faith, virtue, character by enticement to sin. So this is what the being tempted is all about, because yes, it is something that you have to resist, but in doing so, you're developing, if you resist it, you develop the character of Yahweh. If you give in to it, then you're still following after Satan. The word drawn here in verse 14, but each one is tempted when he is drawn away. This word drawn means to draw out. Metaphorically, it means to lure forth. In hunting and fishing, as game is lured from its hiding place, so man by lure is allured from the safety of self-restraint to sin. So basically what this is showing, that Satan has things that are dangling out there to draw us out from the protected place, to draw us out from the house of Yahweh, to draw us away from the practice of righteousness. But again, the only way that you will go forward to it, it's where you have your desires. So if you desire what Satan offers, then you will find yourself drawn towards it. If you don't want anything to do with what Satan offers, it's not going to attract you. You're not going to find it desirable, because your mind is set elsewhere. Keep in mind, again, that Yahshua is the one who set this perfect, perfect, righteous example. And it's really a wonderful thing to study Yahshua and the life that he led and how he was able to resist this temptation to sin, because he was also tempted, but he didn't give in to it. Now, the word, continuing on here, this word also means to drag off, metaphorically, to draw by inward power, lead, and impel. So this is part of the definition. So there's something on the inside that is attracted to whatever Satan is putting in front of us that propels us to it. And of course, that's our desire. So we have to be careful, but this is how it really works. So, but each one is tempted. So remember, verse 13 says, Yahweh doesn't tempt anyone. He doesn't tempt with evil. He doesn't place evil in front of anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lusts. You know, and we covered that in detail the last time concerning being drawn away by his own lust and enticed. This word entice means to catch to bait or to catch by a bait. It also means to entrap, that is figuratively to delude. So there's a deception that comes along with it. It also means a trick, bait, that is figuratively wile, craft, deceit, guile, and subtlety. So there's a certain appearance that the sin has, but it's totally deceitful. Because one of the things that Satan tries to portray, especially in the world, is that you could live a sinful lifestyle and have none of the curses come upon you. Of course, that really defies what is shown in the news constantly, and all the statistics that are read in the house of Yahweh showing you that, yes, anyone who breaks the laws of Yahweh, they suffer the curses. They get the diseases, which brings about death, and of course, the diseases bring about the confusion in the mind, which is going to lead to destruction. So if you really think about it, you would know to yourself that if I were to choose to go the way of Satan, to give in to the pleasure of sin, it will lead to death, because that's the ultimate end result of it. But if you get caught up in it, if you're enticed by it, then you fall into that trap, that enticement. Verse 15, then lust, when it has conceived, and this word conceived, it means to clasp, that is, seize, arrest, capture. To seize, to take one as prisoner. And this is what goes on when an individual gives in to an illegal lust. There's a point that it comes to where they're totally held captive by their own lust. And of course, for those of us who came out of the world, we understand that because we had to free ourselves of all the illegal lust. For those who are born in the house of Yahweh and has been raised in the house of Yahweh, you have a different challenge ahead of you. You have to avoid being captured by illegal lust. You know, and this is where your counselors and your parents come in, because they will guide and shepherd you in the direction away from the ways of Satan if you allow them to do so. But this is what you will have to avoid, becoming entrapped by that lust and, of course, being captured or arrested by it or being taken as a prisoner. That's why many people, when they are caught up in their sin, they feel that they're so helpless to get out of it, that they're caught in a trap, basically, that there is no way out. But that's not true. There's always a way out of sin. Always. And it doesn't really matter when you're caught up in certain things. There's always a way out. Even in the worst, most dire situation that you think that you're in, that is sinful, there is a way out of it. There is a way out of it, and Yahweh gives us that way. So when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. And when sin, when it is fully matured, that word matured is finished in the King James Version. And it means to perfect, to bring to an end, or to complete entirely. So when this sin comes to its full maturity, as is shown in the book of Yahweh, then it brings forth death. But by the time the practice of sin has come to its full maturity, to try and reverse course when the death is upon you, you can't reverse it, because you are going to die in your sins. The only thing that you can do is to repent of it and, of course, you know, make it or confess those sins so that the priest could go to Yahweh on your behalf so that you may be forgiven for the things that you have done. But this is really the whole cycle that is shown here in these few verses from verses 13 to 15, showing exactly how it works. So again, let no one say when he is tempted, I'm tempted by Yahweh, for Yahweh cannot be tempted with evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lusts and enticed. Remember that word enticed means to, that's taking the bait right there. Then when lust has conceived, when it is fully matured, it brings forth sin, and sin, well, when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is fully matured, it brings forth death. But go back to verse 12. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been proved, he will receive the crown and life which Yahweh has promised to those who love him. So Yahshua, our high priest, he was tempted. He was tempted in every single way, yet he did not sin. And when you really think about it, you really have to give it some thought, because you kind of take it for granted. Yes, it wasn't the plan of Yahweh to bring forth that perfect sacrifice.
But the environment that Yeshua was raised in, it wasn't a sinless environment. It wasn't that, you know, the parents hid Yeshua in a cave and taught him up to a certain age, and then they just brought him out, you know, and he wasn't out in society and not capable of seeing certain things or aware of what was going on in society. The difference between Yeshua and us is that Yeshua was well trained in the laws of Yahweh. Hence, he was able to resist the temptation to sin. But let's look at Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2, and let's look at verse 17. For this reason, he had to be made, speaking of Yeshua, for this reason, he had to be made like his brothers in every way. In every way. And keep that in mind. Because once we really grasp this, that Yeshua had to be made like his brothers in every way, a son of man, and he was a man. He faced temptation, but he didn't give in to it. Then we can see that we can also do the same, that we have that same ability that Yeshua has. He was made like his brothers in every way in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to Yahweh, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, tested, and tried, he is able to help those who are being tempted. Yes, he is able to help those who are being tempted. So we know we have a high priest over the house of Yahweh, and through the prophecies and through the scriptures, we know that he is working with the one sent, who has given us that knowledge so that, yes, when we are facing those temptations, we are able to receive that help that comes from Yahweh so that we do not give in to those temptations. Let's look over to Hebrews chapter 4 and read from verse 14. Seeing then we have a great high priest who ascended into the heavens, Yeshua the son of Yahweh, let us hold fast our profession, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all ways tempted as we are, yet was without sin. Therefore, let us approach the throne of mercy with boldness that we may obtain mercy and find compassion in time of need. So Yeshua was tempted as we are. No, he didn't have a television set back then. No, he didn't have the video games and the internet and so forth. But regardless of the means, the way that sin is delivered is still the same. Adultery is still adultery. Fornication is still fornication. Bestiality is still bestiality. Sodomy is still sodomy. It's still the same, regardless of the methods of delivery. The only thing that we have in these last days is a faster way of delivering sin, you know, through these means that has come up with the increase of knowledge. So now you could get it instantly. You don't really have to go anywhere to find it. You know, you could just have it on your cell phone and you have a world of sin just at your fingertips, depending upon what you do with this tool that should be used for righteousness and righteousness alone. But Yeshua had to face it all, but yet he was without sin. And we may think that Yeshua had some special advantages, and yes, he did have a few, but he still had to make the decision. And the only advantage that Yeshua had over us was the breeding, that breeding program where he was bred in a certain way. But outside of that, he had to make decisions on his own. He had to choose not to sin. And he was exposed to it. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 4. And pay close attention to how Yeshua resisted sin. And you'll see something very, very clearly how he did this. In Matthew chapter 4, reading from verse 1, then Yeshua was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Of course, again, as we read in Jacob chapter 1, Yahweh doesn't tempt anyone with evil, nor does he, you know, place evil in front of anyone. For when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights afterwards, he was hungry. So when the tempter came to him, she said, and of course, remember that this is through the various means that Satan has available that she uses. So in whatever form she came to him, She said, "If you are the son of Yahweh, command that these stones be turned to bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahweh." Then the devil took him up into the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the sacred precincts of the temple, and said to him, "If you are the son of Yahweh, throw yourself down, for it is written, for he will give his malachim charge concerning you to keep you in all your ways. They will bear you up in their hands if you should strike your foot against a stone." Yahshua said to her, "It is also written, you must not test Yahweh your father." Again, the devil took him up into an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the magnificence of them, and said to him, "I will give you all of these things if you will fall down and worship or serve me." Then Yahshua said to her, "You get away, Satan, for it is written, Yahweh your father you must reverence, and him only you must serve." Then the devil left him, and behold, Malachim came and ministered to him. But if you look through all of those verses, you see something that is very apparent in Yahshua's response to the temptation. It was the laws of Yahweh. In every single point, he resisted utilizing the laws of Yahweh. It is written. It is written. And you could probably circle that in your scriptures, because that was the key thing about Yahshua that enabled him to resist temptation. It was the laws of Yahweh constantly on his mind. So when he was faced with something that would be desirable to anyone, being offered everything that the world has to offer, his response was, "It is written, you shall not do such and such." And even when Satan tried to use the scriptures to deceive him, he was knowledgeable enough in the scriptures to say, "Well, it is also written, you shouldn't do this." You see, that's the great understanding that Yahshua had. Yahshua studied the laws of Yahweh. He was well trained in the laws of Yahweh. Hence, he was able to resist the temptation when it came. It wasn't that he wasn't faced with, it wasn't that he didn't face temptation. No, everyone has to be tempted in order to be proved. And when you have proven yourself to Yahweh, as Jacob chapter 1 verse 12 says, you will receive that crown and you will receive life. But the key is you have to resist. You have to resist. But to resist like our high priest, you have to have the laws of Yahweh in your mind at all times. Otherwise, you're not really going to have any resistance. We used to have those signs posted around the sanctuary, "Think Law." Remember those signs? "Think Law." And that's really what it takes, thinking law. Now, getting back to Yahshua, how did Yahshua really get like this? What led to the development of his character? Well, if you go back to the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, there are three main things that are identified. The first one being heredity. And we know about Yahshua and his bloodline and how, pastors explained that to us, that when you bring righteous people together, that righteousness is multiplied in the offspring. And of course, it's not just something that works automatically. There still has to be guidance. There still has to be teaching. The next thing is values. And I'm going to read from the Building Moral Excellence on page 13 concerning the values. And it says, your values are the principles or qualities that you consider to be important or worthwhile. Now, we're talking about Yahshua because, yes, Yahshua had that perfect breeding to where he would be able to resist the temptation to sin. But there's more that had to be done to develop that. And this is where it talks about it here in your values. Now, what you value comes from several sources. Your first and most influential teachers were your parents. They have been sharing their values with you from the moment you were born. The things your parents consider important are what you have been taught to value. The things that your parents consider important. And this really ties into adults teaching and training their children, in that it's what you value, you pass on your values to your children. And if you value righteousness and you value the way of life that the house of Yahweh preaches, that's what you're going to pass on to your children. But if you value something else, and it's shown by your conduct, not your words, but by your conduct, then you are also passing on those values to your children. But Yahshua's parents, they passed on their values to him. The other aspect of it is the environment. And this goes back to I'm going to read just a certain thing from page 17 and 18. So in addition to your inherited behavioral traits and your values, environment also plays a key role in the development of your character. The combination of your family, how your home life is structured, your culture, customs, and community help to shape your environment. Just want to read another section here. As important as culture, customs, and community are in the formation and development of your character, one of the most important influences in your environment comes from your parents. Parents have one of the most important jobs on our planet. They are responsible for raising a child from a state of dependency to an independent, self-sufficient, productive member of our society. Parents are also responsible for teaching children how to make moral decisions that will show respect for all life. Parents who provide a safe environment and meet the physical needs of their children as well as consistently display moral principles are likely to have children who develop positive moral principles regarding themselves and others. So the point that I'm making here is to show that Yahshua didn't become this way on his own. His parents played a very, very influential role in helping him to develop the character that he has so that he could become our high priest. In the same way, if you think about our pastor and overseer, you would realize also that his parents played a very, very influential role in him becoming the person that he is today. And then he tells us about his mother reading to him the scriptures as a child. He also talks about his mother when he used to go by these preachers who would come, you know, these Brush Arbor meetings, and how his mother would point out to him the falsehood that the preachers were teaching. He talks about the example of his dad, where his dad said, two wrongs don't make a right, and how those instructions have stuck with him for all his life. But you could see the key role that parents play in shaping their children, in supplying their values, you know, which is really, really, really extremely important, especially in this time that we live in. And let's turn quickly to Luke chapter 2. Because in overcoming the desire to sin, it's not just you yourself that you have to think about. You also have to think about your children. It's as written in Deuteronomy chapter 30, when you read verse 19, where it says that, well, let's turn quickly there. It's holy places in Luke, and turn quickly to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Let me find it here quickly. Deuteronomy chapter 30, where it says in verse 19, therefore choose life so both you and your children may live. Choose life so both you and your children may live. Because as parents, if we're not passing on the right values to our children, we will die in our sins, and they will also die in their sins because of what they were taught by their parents. If they're not receiving those right instructions as taught by the house of Yahweh. So keep that in mind, and let's look at Luke chapter 2. And this is just to give a quick snapshot of Yahshua's life and that influence. So in verse 39, it says, when they perform everything according to the law of Yahweh, they return to Galilee, to their own city of Nazareth, and the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the honor of Yahweh was upon him. Well, that he grew and became strong in spirit and filled with wisdom is because of the teaching of the scriptures, the daily teaching of the laws of Yahweh. That's how he grew. That's how he became strong, so that when the temptation was set before him, he was able to resist with the law. because that's what he was trained, you know, to always have that law of Yahweh on his mind. He was one who was taught diligently. And then you see the example in verse 41. Now every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the Feast of Passover. And of course, I don't really have time to get into it, but if you go down to verse 49, this is what Yahshua's mind was always on. And then he said, Why is it that you search me? Do you not know that I must be about my Father's business? Yahshua had a desire to do the work of Yahweh. But that desire to do Yahweh's work and to remain in the house of Yahweh, to become that faithful high priest, was something that was instilled in him by his parents. That teaching and that guidance that he received. So this is really the main thing that I'm wanting to bring across here, is to show that, yes, we ourselves have to become like Yahshua, but we also have the responsibility to influence our children to do the same. So whatever we value, that's what we're going to pass on to our children, because they also have a great promise in this kingdom that we are being trained for, and they are also a great part of this plan. For your notes, you could write down 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, that shows that there's a way of escape from every temptation. So I want everyone to keep that in mind. Don't think for a moment that you're trapped in whatever sin that you can't seem to get, you know, shake loose. There's a way out, and Yahweh has provided that way. So may Yahweh bless your understanding. So at this time, I'll ask for everyone to please stand. I now turn the services over to the great Kohan Zephaniah Hawkins.
Welcome, everyone. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Please be seated. We've got several news articles, again, showing the prophecies being fulfilled. And we're going to start out with the story about Angelina Jolie. She's taken these radical measures to try to eliminate a curse of sin that, as Pastor has shown, goes to the third and fourth generation. It's not just the character that gets passed on, but it's actual physical problems. And she talks about that, and they talk about how much of an increase certain things get passed on, risks of disease get passed on from one generation to another. And they mentioned 87%, that she had an 87% probability of getting this cancer, which I didn't realize it was that high. And then they have, they've overturned DOMA, which is the Defense of Marriage Act, which is the U.S. Supreme Court basically legalizing homosexual marriage. They've already legalized homosexuality in 2003. They made it a right, but now they're legalizing it. And this has no legal precedent. There's no basis for this position they're taking. It was a 5-4 decision, and this is in fulfillment of Romans 9:29, which Pastor has explained to us, and no one else in the world understands, where it talks about if it was not for a remnant. Let's go there real quick. It's Romans 9:29, page 881, and Isaiah. As Isaiah said before, unless Yahweh of Sabaoth, hosts, armies, had left us a seed, we would have become like Sodom, and we would have been made like Gomorrah. And people read that, and they often think this is talking about the nuclear wars, but it's not. It's talking about this practice of sodomy that they're going to push, and they're going to make us into their image. That word made is just like Yahweh will make us into his image. They are going to make the world into their image, which is that of Sodomites. And everyone's wondering why this is occurring. It's because of them actually ruling the world along with the Catholic Church. And this is what they're promoting behind the scenes while at the same time acting like they're against it. In 1996, the Defense of Marriage Act passed by a vast majority, both House and Senate and President Clinton, and now they're all acting like that was a crazy thing to do. You see the turnaround because the Catholic Church has decided now's the time to move forward. Then we go to a radio interview with Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, and this is on an abortion bill they were trying to pass in Texas that would make it illegal to get an abortion past the 20th week and try to prevent those things that occurred in the House of Horrors in Philadelphia. And that was stopped by a filibuster, which was basically a gang from Planned Parenthood and a bunch of other people. And in this radio interview, he talks about what they're going to do about it, because they're just going to have this, they're going to try to pass this bill again. They have the votes, but these people disrupted the proceedings so that they couldn't vote on it in time. They call it a filibuster. But and then we have over-the-counter. Plan B is going to be available. I think we might have played this one before, but we also have a story about how they're going to make They're going to put condoms in vending machines in 22 public schools in Philadelphia. This is where that abortion doctor had all of his business. So let's play the news. Everyone, please stand. The greatest teacher in the world, the great Kohan Israel Hawkins!
Hello, everyone!
Praise Yahweh.
All right, come on. Come on, come on. Praise Yahweh. You may be seated.
May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I had a lot of stuff to cover there, and I thought we're going to have to write it to get it in, but the Supreme Court, of course, the Supreme Court needs for a person to run for judge for a Supreme Court, they need to take the Peaceful Solution Character Education course first. And once they pass that, then maybe they would be eligible to qualify for citizenship, maybe. Most of this stuff I'm going to write about, especially about the homosexuals and the death and disease that it causes, but I can't cover this. But you got a bunch of it here in the news. You also, the elder brought a great lesson here today in his speech that ties right into this. But the Supreme Court, of course, they're whether you want to say it or not, or whether they want to admit it or not, those nine people are serving Satan. They're not serving Yahweh. And if you'll, to back that up, you need to look up First Yochanan or First John, if you have a King James Version, 3, verse 7 and 8. They're serving Satan. They're deceived, of course, as Revelations 12, 9 says. Now, there are opponents, and led by Satan, when Satan was cast down, she started working with these people to oppose the house of Yahweh. In fact, that's exactly what they're doing. That's their job in these last days. They don't know the scripture, so they're being led fully by that side. Today, let me see if I can find it here. I think I left all my notes on my desk. but I'll go by memory and cover the biggest part of this. I took the notes off of my papers and left them laying on the table if anyone is there to hear. But I want you to go over to Zechariah. We'll start there first, and maybe someone will deliver my notes later. But in Zechariah, the whole book of Zechariah is written about Yahweh's last day's work. And the work of Yahweh is proceeding, of course, along with what Satan is trying to do. And, of course, Satan is trying to stop the house of Yahweh. I don't really need notes, so don't worry about that. I could preach for weeks without it. Just the scriptures, that's all I need. But if you look at chapter 3 and you see, now remember what is going on, what took place in the Supreme Court this week. Now, this hasn't changed a great deal of stuff. It was all, everything was going on anyway. They just showed how they can change the laws to suit themselves. Daniel shows the same thing, shows this beastly system and how it will change the law. But no one has ever understood what I'm about to show you here in the third chapter of Zechariah. The commentators know something, and they've tried to figure this out. They've tried to figure out the man called the branch Of course, you can't do it unless you know the you have a background, a foundation in the scriptures to begin with, before you can ever put all these scriptures together. And then, too, if you reject book two of the book of Yahweh, then you won't get the information that is shown there. But here it says, then he showed me Yahshua. He showed me Yahshua. If you go back to the second chapter and verse 11, he says, many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day. Many nations. Well, we know that we, from Revelations, we see about 2 billion people that is actually going to be joined to Yahweh. And Zechariah is speaking of this right here when he says, many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day and will be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of them, midst of you. You know, Yahweh shows this in book one in Deuteronomy, that and he showed it to King Solomon. He says, if you'll keep my Sabbaths and honor me by keeping your appointments with me, then my eyes and my heart will be there during those appointed times, if you will keep my laws, he said. And of course, Solomon did for a while, and he brought forth some great work for Yahweh. But he said, they will be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of you. And you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me. Yahweh of hosts has sent me. You will know this. You're going to know this. Now, if you remember, Yahshua said that the work of Yahweh is to believe into the one sent. So you got to put that in mind with it, and then you've got to see who he sent. Of course, the two witnesses in the last days. But believe in the one sent, and you will know that Yahweh has sent me. When you start seeing this, when you see these things take place, well, we see them already lining up and Yahweh doing things that will bring this about. But then you will see the one that Yahweh sent me. Yahweh will inherit Yada. That is translated wrong, according to all the authorities. His portion, the holy land, and will choose Jerusalem again. The correct translation of this in chapter 2, verse 10. Chapter 2 and verse 10, sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion. For behold, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of you, says Yahweh, and many nations will join to Yahweh in that day and will be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of you, and you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me. Yahweh will inherit Yada, his portion in the Holy Land, and will choose Jerusalem again. The word daughter there, according to the Hebrew Chaldees lexicon, means house of Yahweh, but they translated it daughter. The word Zion in the word Zion, according to the Hebrew Aramaic dictionary by Barkath Jethro, means 613 positive and prohibitive. If you do them as they are commanded, they are deeds of merit. The word dwell, like dwell in the midst of you, according to the Hebrews Chaldees lexicon, means Yahweh dwells at Abel. He dwells at Abel. Why would they leave that out? Of course, they didn't understand it, so they thought that someone made a mistake in writing it, the commentators say. The word send me, according to the Hebrew and Chaldees lexicon of the Old Testament by Julius I, actually means Yahweh will send forth a person. The word Yada actually means to give thanks, to praise, to celebrate, to glorify, or to name aloud Yahweh, to openly say his name. The word "in" that is in that scripture actually should be translated "because." The word "holy" in that scripture means "my sanctified ones." That means those who fulfill the whole law. The word "land" means, it should have been translated, "men." Men. The word "Jerusalem" there. It means a priest or teacher, instruct, to keep peace. The word "again" is actually means to be a witness. The correct translation of 10 through 12, chapter 2 of Zechariah, "Sing and rejoice, O house of Yahweh, you who keep all my laws, for behold, I come and I will dwell in the midst of you at Abel." I will, quite differently, isn't it, when you get the correct translation. "I will dwell in the midst of you at Abel," says Yahweh. "And many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day and will be his people. And Yahweh will dwell in the midst of you at Abel. And you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent someone to you. Yahweh will be the inheritance and portion of those who reverence him and openly proclaim his name because they are his saints, and he will choose the priest who teaches peace to be his witness." Praise Yahweh. Well, of course, the Supreme Court is bringing forth sodomy, as Yahweh said the Supreme Court would, of course. The little horn in Daniel 7, the little horn passes many laws. That's what Daniel said. He said he passes many laws. We'll turn there. You be turning there now to Daniel, the 7th chapter. He will pass many laws, and of course, this is what we see coming forth in the Supreme Court at this time. We call it Supreme Court. It's the Supreme Court of the United States, of course, and we see it bringing forth the laws of sin. It's nothing but sin. Every law they pass is to encourage the people to sin. They don't teach both sides of the coin. They don't teach you, you do these things and you're going to bring these horrible diseases on you that we just saw in the news here just a few minutes ago, played on the news. If you go on the internet, you will find that it's a thousand times greater than what we see on the news. We see very little of it. Today is the, someone called me this morning and said, "Do you know what today is?" And I said, "No." "Tell me." They said, "Today is 6:29. And they waited till 6:29 to call me so they could call me at 6:29 a.m. on 6:29. Now, of course, that has a great meaning that we will get into here in just a little bit later, but to the world now, man's laws makes it legal or illegal. Now, that's the Supreme Court that they've set up saying, tell us what is legal and what is illegal. Now, what's wrong with that? You know, it's almost like giving a boy a car and telling him to ignore all the stop signs. Just go have fun and ignore all the stop signs, all the red lights. That's what the Supreme Court is doing. They're saying this is legal. Now just go have fun, do what you want to do, and ignore all the stop signs out there, all the red lights, and just have fun. And that's as far as it gets. Now, of course, when the boy runs the red light and gets killed, well, that's okay. We'll sell your body parts and get money out of those. We were just reading an article. I couldn't believe this was going on. But did you know that the dead bodies. They take the dead bodies of children and they use it in a thing called chicken pox, in a vaccine called chicken pox. I didn't know that till just a few minutes ago, and it was shown to me. And of course, the abortions go hand in hand with sodomy. They go hand in hand. Here it is. Abortion fetal tissue. Chicken pox vaccine is also grown with living cells from aborted fetal tissues known as, and it's a diploid vaccine. They carry their own set of biological and obviously mortal risk. As far as the precautionary principle stands, injecting virus infected human cells alongside powerful immunotoxin into the body of healthy children in order to protect them from a benign immune strengthening bout of chickenpox sounds like the very definition of insanity. Well, of course, this is doctors now that wrote this and said this is what you're getting into. Well, of course, this traces back now to, of course, sodomy. Let's go to Daniel 7 now. He says, Yahweh's prophet Daniel showed this very thing of the passing of the laws of this beastly system. The beastly system. If you look at chapter 7, and look at the fourth beast. After this, I saw the mighty vision, I saw in a night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and exceedingly strong, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces. This word devour takes you back to Genesis 49 now, to what will occur in the last days, and it shows you the very tribes that will bring forth this trait. And broke in pieces, then trampled the residue with its feet. It was different. It shows no mercy. If you look at what he's showing you here, this fourth beast, which was the so-called Holy Roman Empire. Every commentary agrees with me there. The fourth beast is the makeup of four different beasts. And it shows you here the fourth beast to be not a merciful beast, as we see from the murders of Revelations that they call it. And of course, they teach abortion. They say in their Supreme Court, it's lawful for abortions. They say in their Supreme Court, it's lawful to bring forth these diseases. When they say, you know, this is okay, they're telling our children in the schools, this is okay to practice. And of course, these things are not okay because they bring forth all kinds of diseases. Children are being born with them. Doctors are operating on children. They're taking transplants from one person and putting it in another person. So that person who was born with a defective lung brought forth from an STD. It's in their brain also. I'm wondering, are they going to experiment there? Maybe change the head? Swap heads with another body, take the brain out and put it in another body. There, all of this is done for money, of course. And on the news this week, all week long, they were talking about some little girl who was born with the sins of her parents invading her body, and of course she was needing a body part. They couldn't find one with her age, so she went to court, the parents did, to get them to let her have one of an older person. And they put that one in, and it didn't work. And a few days later, they got another one and put in, and the last I heard, that one was working. Now, of course, this is the money that is being made. But and this is, and you think, boy, what geniuses these people are. But nothing is said about stopping the cause. Do you see the difference here? Now, of course, we, the house of Yahweh, we are holding up a standard against these people. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but I want you to turn back to Zechariah again here. Zechariah 3, and he says, Zechariah 3 verse 1 says, then hold your place in Daniel, but turn to Zechariah 3 verse 1 and remember what we're speaking of here, of the beastly system and the laws it passes and saying this is legal or this is illegal. And of course, they'll pass a law, and then a few years later, when the majority votes against it, they'll say, oh, no, that's we made a mistake there. And so they'll change the law. But they have that right. They're given that right. Those nine people who need some education, these people need education bad because they're not educating the people in what is actually causing this baby to be needing a something for his body. They're not telling you what is in your brain right now. You're liable to kill over dead in a few days. Or you'll be needing another brain or another head or another longer heart or whatever it is in your body. But everybody in America has these things right now. I know there's young people here that think that they're gonna live forever, you know. And you can. Yahweh offers a way to live forever, but not through this world, not through those nine members of the Supreme Court. They're offering you a sickly, dirty, filthy life is what they're offering you right now. The whole world is offering you this. The schools, the churches, everyone. Well, here in Zechariah now, speaking of a last day's work that Yahweh has already established and is holding up a standard to this world. And of course, we're being attacked, but he says, then he showed me Yahshua the high priest. Yahshua the high priest. Well, of course, they say, well, that was, and the King James translated it Joshua, and they said that was Joshua the son of Nun. Well, Joshua the son of Nun, if you have any sense at all of the scriptures, you know Joshua the son of Nun died almost 1,000 years before this. <You know? laughs> So it's not him that they're holding up here. And number two, Joshua was never a high priest. This is a lie that was brought forth by commentators and people trying to figure out who this Joshua was that is high priest here. Well, of course, we know it's Yahshua. If you turn over to chapter 10 of Hebrews, don't lose your place here in Zechariah. Hold your finger there. You got 10 fingers if you'll just use them here. Hebrews 10, we see in verse 19, therefore, brothers, having boldness to enter in through the most holy place by the blood of Yahshua, by a new and living way, he has consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, and having a high priest over the house of Yahweh, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of the faith, having our hearts sprinkled with the from an evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. Well, we see here Yahshua, and they translated that Joshua. If you look on over now, because I mean, just in this same chapter, go to verse 24, and he says, Let us consider one another. That's what the house of Yahweh teaches. Remember? I had a young priest yesterday asking me if he could bring a sermon on servitude. The attitude of servitude. I said, yes, by all means, we'll find you a place. The attitude of servitude, that's what he's talking about here. Let us consider one another. How? Wash their feet. If they need to wash and their feet needs washing, wash it. If they're hungry, feed them. Be a servant, in other words. Well, here in that verse, 24, let us consider one another how we may urge one another on towards love and righteous works. Not just believe now, or believe only, as the Baptist wants to tell you, not forsaking the gathering of ourselves together. Apparently, he didn't know that all you had to do was believe, huh? Did you get what I said there, boys? Did you see he's telling us to do something here? Notice closely what he's telling us to do. Not forsaking our gathering of ourselves together as on the Sabbath days. This is speaking of the Sabbath, the appointed days that we hold up to the world, saying, come keep your appointment with Yahweh and you'll learn the wages of sin. Not forsaking the gathering of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching, the day. He speaks of it earlier here, the day of destruction. For if we sin willfully, did you get that? Remember what sin is? 1 John 3:4, sin is the breaking of Yahweh's laws. So he's speaking of gathering yourselves together and saying, if you don't do this, it's sin. And if we sin willfully, if we don't gather ourselves together on his appointed days, then we break this law and we sin. If we're doing this willfully, after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sin, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment and fury indignation, which will devour the adversary. That is shown, of course, in Revelation 20, the great white throne judgment. But here we have now a high priest over the house of Yahweh. Chapter 10 and verse 21, and he's saying, don't forsake your gathering of yourselves together. If you turn back to chapter 4, and they want to tell you this was Joshua ben Nun, who was a general of an army that led the children of Israel into the land of Egypt. And of course, they say, well, he was high priest. They're lying to you like dogs. He was not a high priest, never carried that title at all. In fact, he worked with a high priest all of his life, all through this whole thing, but they ignore those facts, scriptural facts, and say he was this high priest here that came down later here to chapter 10 and says, don't forsake this assembling of yourselves together. Well, in chapter 4 now of Hebrews, we were in chapter 10, chapter 4 of Hebrews, we see from the first part of chapter 3, I mean the last part of chapter 3, that the people didn't enter Yahweh's rest. And they say, well, that must be the heavenly rest. No, it's speaking of keeping the Sabbath, as we're shown in chapter 4, there in verse 9, therefore there remains the keeping of the Sabbath to the people of Yahweh. For if he who has entered into his rest has also ceased from his own works, as Yahweh did from his. This is what Yahshua taught. He says, cease from your own works on the seventh day. Do Yahweh's work. It's right to do Yahweh's work. He taught the Sabbath day. Now verse 4. For he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and Yahweh rested the seventh day. Is that not speaking of the Sabbath, the fourth commandment that says, keep the Sabbath, the seventh day holy. Notice it for yourself. The seventh day from all his works. That's what Yahweh did. And in this place again, if you will enter into his rest, since therefore it remains for some must enter it. It remains for some to do so. This last one that it remains for is going to make it glorious. They're going to follow the example of Yahshua, and Isaiah said this branch is going to make the Sabbath rest glorious for the people. That's what we see here at the house right now. Praise Yahweh. And those to whom it was first preached did not enter in because of disobedience. Over in chapter 3 and verse 19 said they didn't enter because of disbelief. They didn't believe. That's the reason it is important that you believe into the one sent. The one sent by Yahweh will make, he's called the branch, he's called the witness, he's called olive tree, olive branch. But they didn't enter because of disobedience. Again, he designates a certain day, saying in David, today, after so long a time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your heart. Now, the King James Version, verse 8, says, Joshua. And the commentaries say this was Joshua ben Nun that gave them rest. No, Joshua ben Nun marched them to the land. They took over the land. They established houses. And Yahweh saying, don't forget now, Joshua, he went by the laws, yes. He, under a high priest that was teaching him, he led the people into that land, killed many people in doing so, got them out of the way, and set up the land for the people to follow before he died. This right here, brethren, is speaking of that man we just spoke of, died in 1500 BCE. This right here is Yahshua, who we see in chapter 10 is the high priest over the house of Yahweh. Now, Yahshua caused them to rest in obedience to the law spoken of by Yahweh in a day previously. Yes, this was just before they killed him. He was saying, this is the way to keep the Sabbath. You know, no one has ever kept the Sabbath after the apostles the way Yahshua taught it, except this house today. That's right. Therefore, there remains the keeping of the Sabbath for the people of Yahweh. That means you must keep the Sabbath. Then he said again in chapter 10, turn back there and read that in chapter 10 now again. Chapter 10, let us not forsake the assembling of ourselves together. Verse 24, not forsaking the gathering of yourselves together, because if you sin willfully, after the knowledge of the truth is come, you see that? There remains no more sacrifice. Yahshua was the sacrifice. Repent and be converted so your sins will be blotted out. Now, with that in your mind, let's go back to Zechariah again. Zechariah 3. Then he showed me Yahshua. And they translated it Joshua. They admit that the spelling and everything is Yahshua. All the commentators do, the dictionaries, the concordances, everyone says this is the name of the Savior, Yahshua. But they translated it Joshua, and the commentators tell the people, well, this must be referring to Joshua ben Nun. Well, of course, they lie about everything, like the Supreme Court hiding the truth today. They're led by the same being. They oppose the house of Yahweh. He showed me Yahshua, the high priest. High priest? Hebrews 10, 21. We have a high priest over the house of Yahweh. Now hold your place right there and look over chapter 6. You don't even have to turn the page. And you see this same man again. Yahshua. Yahshua, chapter 6, and look at verse 11. Take the silver and gold and make crowns and set them upon the head of Yahshua. Now they put the son of Yozadak. Now, this has not been none, is it? They had met in Strong's Concordance. In every other authoritative book, this is the name of Yahweh that we wrote, Yozadak. They put it Jozadak. The King James did. The high priest, make crowns, set it on the head, upon the head of Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, the high priest. High priest, Hebrews 10:21. You see that? Surely you can put that together. Anybody should be able to see that. Speak to him and say, this is what Yahweh of hosts says, behold the man. Behold the man. Somebody he's telling him to behold here. Yahweh is telling Yahshua, the high priest, to do a job. It's set in stone for him to do a job here with a man whose name is the branch. Wow, if we only knew who that was, huh? Wow. For he will branch out from his place, and he will build the house of Yahweh. Wonder who in the world will do that? Who on earth could do something like that? He's going to build the house of Yahweh. So behold him, Yahshua, high priest, in the last days. Help him build the house of Yahweh. Yes, he will build the house of Yahweh. He will bear glory. He will sit and rule on his throne. He will be a priest. He will be a priest. You get that? Upon his throne, and the council of peace will be between them both. Between him, the man who built the house, and Yahshua, the high priest, over the house of Yahweh. We have a high priest over the house of Yahweh. That's what it says. Now go back here to Zechariah 3 again. So, verse 1, he says, then he showed me Yahshua, the high priest, standing before the messenger of Yahweh. Isn't that beautiful? If you look back to verse 11 of chapter 2, it says, and many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day, and will be his people. If you go over to Revelations, hold your place there in Zechariah, Revelation 7, you'll see four malachim standing on the four corners of the earth. These are messengers of the earth, holding the four winds, that is, having power over these four great armies that's standing here, so that the wind should not blow upon the earth, nor the sea, nor any tree. And I saw another Moloch ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Father, and he cried with a voice, saying to the four Molochim, do not hurt the earth. If you look back here to chapter 6, you will see the four Molochim this is talking about, the four messengers here that this is speaking of. The four messengers is the quartet. The quartet that represents the four horns of the golden altar on which death was portrayed loud and clear. And he says, hurt not the earth, nor the sea, or any of the trees until we have sealed the servants of our Father in their forehead. Now here's the great number that is going to come out if you go back to Zechariah again of the nations here. Chapter 2, many, verse 11, and many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day and will be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of them, and then you will know that Yahweh has sent me. Now back to chapter 3 there and verse 1. Then he showed me Yahshua, the high priest, standing before the messenger of Yahweh, with Satan standing at his right hand to oppose him. Now, it should become clear right now, when you see these articles come out like you did this week, how Satan is opposing the house of Yahweh. Opposing the house. But as Yahshua said in Matitya, I believe it's Matitya 16 and verse 18, Yahshua said, upon this rock, that is the house of Yahweh, I'm going to establish my house. And he says the gates of hell, which we're seeing in the Supreme Court, the nine members of the Supreme Court, and the quartet that is trying with their supervision, and of course the little horn of Daniel 7, who is leading the nations of the earth today, saying, this is the way that we will bring peace right here to reestablish the Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire. This is the way we're going to establish peace. Well, of course, they can't establish peace right here in America. The decisions they're making is telling the children in the schools, commit adultery, commit sodomy, fornication, commit bestiality. It's all okay. They're doing it in other places. These other nations are doing it. So it's okay to do it here. Now, right now, it's spreading. It's spreading big time. It's also bringing big time problems. They want to keep this hush-hush. They don't want you to know that millions of people, billions of people, all over the earth right now is harboring one of these STDs that cause heart attacks, brain cancer. Yes, brain cancer. We just had one die of brain cancer this week. Goldberg, I believe was his name. David Goldberg. He's a producer and an actor, I guess. Died of brain cancer. STDs, they know that STDs cause human papilloma virus is one of them. And they just admitted this week that it caused cancer in the throat and in many other places. They also admit in the same articles that it causes in men cancer of the neck, cancer of the brain, cancer of the throat, and in many other of your body parts, it also causes cancer. Now, these people that are having these things, that are coming down with them, many of them don't even know that they got them. In fact, the biggest majority of them don't know they got them until they start hurting. And then they go to the doctor for surgery. And, of course, the doctor says, well, if I operate, you can live maybe a few years here. You know, if I take these body parts off where you can't get cancer, if I take your breast off, you won't get cancer of the breast. Well, does that prevent you from getting it in another place? Does any of this make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to anyone. But it makes money. It makes big time money. And Yahweh said, even after a third of the people are dead, over a fourth part of the earth, they still won't repent of their sorceries. Pharmaceuticals, that's what that word means. The selling of medicine. That's what the world is. That's Satan opposing us. And they're standing in the Supreme Court and they're opposing us, the house of Yahweh. And next week, I'll get into this sermon. Maybe I won't lose my notes next week. I'll get back into this because Yahweh shows we will lift up a standard against them. And that's what we're doing right now. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next leader. I love you. Yeah.